Canon Press Audio presents the 2006 ACCS Conference, copyright 2006. If you would like to find out more about related audio sets and books, you may call Canon Press at 800-488-2034. For a complete listing of our products or to order online, please visit our website at www.canonpress.org. Thank you for purchasing this audio set.
All right, I think it's about time. We'll go ahead and get started. My name is Chuck Evans. I'm the head of Regent School of Austin down in Austin, Texas. And I just have to say that it is weather in Ohio is really not much better than it is in Austin right now, which is a little disappointing. As Patch mentioned this morning in the introduction, this was supposed to have been a dual presentation. Actually, originally it was supposed to be a single presentation by a board member of a Christian classical school to talk about how board members can help preserve the missions of their schools by observing the classrooms and observing the activity in the school. And so Patch asked Laura Ruby, who's one of our more engaged and thoughtful board members, to if she would make the presentation. Well, she called and just asked for a little bit of feedback on what she wanted to do, and so we started talking a little bit and we collaborated on an outline, and then she said, "Well, wouldn't you mind just co-presenting with me?" And I said, "Well, it might be more interesting." Okay, so I'll be happy to help you. And then she said she couldn't come. So you could look at, there are a couple of different ways you could look at this. One, you could look at it sort of a little bait and switch. The other thing you could do is you could say that a seminar on board members observing classrooms has been hijacked by an administrator who gets to tell you what he thinks. This is primarily for board members to help people to be engaged in a productive and helpful way. And to really help board members to understand a little bit more clearly about their role in preserving the mission of the school. And I'll say even more than preserving the mission, advancing the mission of the school. I think sometimes we get a little bit too tentative with our missions, the reasons that our schools exist. And rather than thinking, you know, how can I make this more applicable? How can I expand the application of this mission into more families' lives? We tend to, you know, sort of fall back to a more protective stance, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. We do want to preserve the missions of our schools, but we also want to see the mission advancing in our schools, in the lives of our students, the lives of our teachers. So there'll be some, this is primarily, like I said, for board members, but we're going to talk about observation and how to be observant, and there'll be certainly, hopefully, things too that if you're an administrator or a teacher, you can take away to coach each other with, and also maybe advise your board members whose help you need on some of these things. First of all, can you hear me all right? Okay. All right, very good. All right, well, let's start with a prayer, and then we'll get going. Thank you, Father, for the opportunity to serve you in schools in which we are guided by missions and purposes, where we're asked to consider the reasons that we do what we do on a regular basis. And we pray that you would help us to maintain that discipline, both in individual schools and as a movement. And we ask, Lord, that that in this brief time that we might all be helped in that discipline. In Christ's name, amen. All right, well, first I want to talk about types of board members and the effects that these general types of board members might have on teachers and classrooms. So we get a little framework about the types of roles that board members sometimes play, and then we will get into some of the details of how you can be the most help as a board member to the people who are working in your school. It is true that in classical and Christian schools, I think probably more than many other private school environments, board members tend to be engaged in the life of the school in really remarkable ways. Now, some of this comes from the way that schools are founded. It's a group of parents who get together, start a school for their own children and their friends' children. And you know, by virtue of them starting the school, they're the initial board, and they're heavily, heavily involved in everything that happens at the beginning of the school. And that ethos of being an involved and engaged board member lives on in the life of the school. Another reason is that because of the philosophical distinctives of our schools, it requires a certain type of board member who can engage in that conversation to really provide relevant guidance and governance to the school. And so those types of people tend to want to be a little bit more engaged than many board members in more conventional schools. There's just a different set of expectations for the level of conversation that you as a board member are expected to have about what's happening in your school and why you do what you do. Now, the thing is that as a school matures and it hires professionals, educators to handle the day-to-day and to execute the mission of the school, people start crossing over into one another's space. And that produces tension. Now, there's nothing wrong with that tension. As a matter of fact, if you're a board member and you hire a head of school or even a teacher who doesn't see the classroom as their environment, who doesn't take an ownership sense of responsibility for that environment, you've got the wrong people working in your school. So the fact that people may feel like their space is being invaded occasionally by non-professionals is natural. It's normal, nothing to be afraid of. But we do have to figure out how to manage that tension so that it works to the advantage of the students, to the advantage of the teachers, to the advantage of the mission of the school, rather than becomes a competitive distraction. So that's one point. That is one starting point where we have to remind ourselves of. All right, I think there are three types in this context of board members, and you don't want to be two of them, and you want to try to figure out how to mold yourself and your colleagues into being the third. The first is the absentee board member. This is a person who rarely is seen or rarely sees the actual life of the school. And it really doesn't matter whether they have a child in the school or not. It's a little more difficult to be an absentee board member if you don't have, what did I just say? It's easier to be an absentee board member if you don't have children in the school or grandchildren or something like that. But really it's a person who just doesn't engage very much in the life of the school, and usually that's pretty obvious. There's sort of a positive negative to this. First of all, when an absentee board member exercises some sort of prerogative in the life of the school, especially in a way that has an impact on teachers, there is a tendency on the part of teachers and maybe sometimes administrators to sort of ask the question, you know, the how in the world does he or she know? You know, so we'll call it the how does he or she know phenomenon that an absentee board member creates around themselves or can create around themselves, and that and has that kind of an impact on the people who are working in the school. Now, it may be that an absentee board member is really genuinely committed to the principles of the school, to the mission, to the purpose, and that they are really good at advising from the standpoint of principle. And we need that. Schools need that. The boards need that. But there is a sense in which you can lose the trees for the forest sometimes. And in order to have a credible voice in the life of the school, especially a school that encourages a lot of engagement from parents and in which you have other board members who are highly engaged, you need to figure out a way not to be absent. Then there's the omnipresent board member. This probably, for our circumstances, is a little more familiar, a little more common. And the phenomenon sometimes that can be created in the relationship with teachers and staff by the omnipresent board member is the "who does he or she think she is" phenomenon. Wait a minute, I thought I'm the one who's supposed to be teaching third grade, you know? Well, I thought I was the athletic director. And an omnipresent board member who's highly engaged, highly involved, sometimes can get themselves so involved and entangled that they start to undermine their own credibility with teachers and staff because they're too involved and they've crossed too far into the space that people have been asked to manage for us. These people often advise primarily from proximity. And there's an up and down side to that, too. We want to be informed as board members, and we want informed board members. At least we ought to as staff and teachers. But again, you can lose the forest for the trees, and board members who get preoccupied with minutiae, with the way that other people are doing their jobs in the school, often can create conflict and competition that's unhealthy. So what do we want to be? We want observant board members. And when we say observant board members, here I think is the impact goal that you want to have on your teachers and your staff. And we'll call this the he/she must really care phenomenon. Your involvement needs to communicate to the people who are serving the school, the people who ultimately are serving your interests as a board, that you really do care. You care about the school, you care about them, you care about the quality of the work that they're doing, you care about the students and the impact that is being had on them. That's what your goal is. And so we'll say, in this case, where an observant board member is advising from a principled proximity. A principled proximity. You are close enough to know what's going on from a reasonable first-hand standpoint, but you are distanced enough that you can see the larger picture of what's going on in the school and have a sense of whether or not, as a school, you are achieving your mission or growing toward the achievement of your school's mission. So we don't want to be absentees. We don't want to be omnipresent. But we do want to be observant. And that's our goal. All right. So the second question we need to ask is this. Why must board members visit classrooms? Why must board members visit classrooms? This might seem like an obvious question, but I'm not so sure that it is. Not so sure that it is. The first reason that I think board members need to be in the classroom is accountability for themselves. Accountability for themselves. And by the way, this can apply equally to administrators and other staff who are given responsibility for making observations. But the first reason that board members need to visit classrooms is accountability for themselves. You need to be able to answer this question truthfully. Am I describing what we are doing, what we are accomplishing in our school, accurately? Am I describing what we are doing in our school accurately? That's the point of accountability. We are all staff, faculty, board members, and ought to be cheerleaders for our school. But we ought to be telling the truth about the things that we believe are happening. It's not uncommon to assume that wonderful things are happening when in fact maybe they're not. Or maybe they're not as often or as frequently, or maybe they used to and they're not anymore. Or it's also true that that sometimes we assume that negative things might be happening, things that might be happening, which may not be. So we need to make ourselves accountable for the things that we say, the things that we believe about the environments of our school. And the most dependable way to do that is to gain information about what's happening in our schools firsthand. Secondly, we are responsible, or board members are responsible, for assessing the quality of the school and the integrity of the mission. You don't have any more of an important role than that. Lots of things are required of board members. You need to be responsible for the fiduciary aspects of the school. You have a responsibility to plan for the school's future. You have a responsibility to make sure that the administration is living up to its commitments and doing the job that you've asked them to do. But there's nothing more important than keeping your eye constantly on the integrity of the school's mission. Are we who we say we really are? Is our identity as a school intact? And it's your responsibility to be able to assess that. And you cannot assess what you have not seen. Because the identity of the school is lived out in the activities of the people who inhabit the school. The way that the teachers teach, the way that the students are learning, the quality of the coaching on the field, all of the things that happen in your school are the indicators of whether or not your identity is intact, whether you are who you say you are. Are we doing what we say we have set out to do? Thirdly, why must board members visit classrooms? To encourage yourself and to equip you to give example, to have examples to encourage other people. I think one of the most effective ways for board members to encourage the members of the community around them is to be able to describe for them something wonderful that they saw happen in their school. So you're in the parking lot after a basketball game and you're talking to a dad and you say, so how's eighth grade going? And the dad says, well, you know, up, you know, there are good days and there are bad days and, you know, we've had some problems, you know, at home and, but, you know, everything's generally, you know, just going along and, you know, no worse than we expected, but maybe not so much better either. And at that point, for a board member to be able to say, you know what, I was in the eighth grade classroom a couple months ago, and I saw this most phenomenal thing happen in a history class, and these kids talking about all this stuff, and I was so impressed with the maturity of these 13, 14-year-olds in that context. And I know you don't see it at home all the time, but I saw it in their classroom with their teacher. They're coming along. Things are happening in their lives that are shaping them into being the kind of people that we all want them to be. That dad is going to go home a lot more confident and a lot more optimistic about his son, who's, you know, probably a mess in the eighth grade, and confident that he's got his child in the right place to help him shape him in the way that they want. So board members need to equip themselves to be able to encourage people with real things that are happening in the school. Fourth, board members need to visit classrooms because administrators and other staff who have responsibility to observe and evaluate teaching need more information. There is no such thing as having too much information, for an administrator to have too much information about what's going on in the classroom. And we started at Regents a protocol where the board actually requires its members on a semester basis to make visits to classrooms. And the additional requirement is not is so they go and they watch and but the additional requirement is that they give me some perspective on what they saw. And it's not even that precise, a narrative. I was in this classroom and I saw this, and this. Inevitably, there's usually a question or two or three that might be asked, you know, what about this? So there is an opportunity for some dialogue, but for someone who has a keen sense of the mission of the school, our overall purpose and objectives for each one of these kids, to be able to be sitting in the classroom and in a I won't call it a non-evaluative role, but in a sort of a non-professional role, an informed non-professional role, to be able to make observations helps me understand and my staff understand what's really going on in that classroom, what that teacher really is like. Now, it's not a complete picture, and so it's one more thing in all of the information that we try to accumulate about what's going on in our classrooms. But it's useful, and it's not just useful because it's more information. It's useful because it's coming from a uniquely informed source. Now, it is true that administrators are often afraid of this type of interaction between board members. Sometimes administrators might feel like, well, if a board member sees something that they don't approve of or that is obviously a problem, but it's not really symptomatic of something more systemic. It's just sort of an isolated thing and it's easy to fix, but I don't do something dramatic in response, you know, are they going to feel like I'm not paying attention to their observation or advice? You understand that, the tension that sometimes might occur there. But that information is important information, and board members need to feel like the observations that they make from their own standpoint, even if they've never taught a minute in a classroom in their entire lives, is valuable. So, how do you become an observant board member? How do you become an observant board member? All right. First, you as a board member need to know your teachers and be able to communicate a shared responsibility for the school's mission with them. And there are lots of different ways that schools try to do this. Sometimes boards host dinners and we'll have the faculty over. One of the most valuable things that has occurred at our school in the last couple of years is that a number of board members, probably all of our board members or most of our board members in some way, have begun or have participated with the faculty in the training that we have for them. So it's not really relevant to the board member's job, but the fact that a board member is willing to sit in for a 3 or 4 hour, you know, seminar on pedagogy or on the classical tradition or on, you know, how to disciple students in the classroom, anything. That they're willing to take the time, willing to sit there and absorb and learn and kind of get a sense of the quality of the interaction and dialogue that's going on, is a huge encouragement to our teachers. And it communicates that the board members see this as a shared responsibility. And it's not even so much, well, you've got your job over there and we've got our job over here. And, you know, if we bump into each other in the parking lot and chit-chat, you know, that'd be fine. It's really saying, look, I feel so responsible for the mission of this school that I want to know what you're thinking about when you go into the classroom and do your job. I want to know, I want to have some experience of how you're being equipped. Attending ACCS convention with faculty, I think, is another tremendous way to communicate that this is a shared mission. And then looking for ways to interact with teachers at a personal level, apart from their responsibilities as teachers, apart from their job, finding ways just to spend time with teachers and try to get a sense of who they are and what motivates them and how in the world did they get into this occupation in the first place anyway. I mean, think about that. Every person who's teaching in your school, if you're a board member, has a history. And that history, there's some indication of God's providence of how He led them to you. And to be doing the things that are happening, that they're doing, that benefit you and your school and your families, the whole community that has grown up around your school. So know your teachers. Secondly, learn what to look for. Learn what to look for. And this is a big issue, I know, with board members. There are those board members who are extremely eager to get into the classroom. And some of those fall into our omnipresent category. And we might ask them to be a little less eager from time to time. All right? But there are board members, too, who, when asked to sit in on classrooms or to stand on the sideline, during a practice in the afternoon, who feel completely inadequate, and because of that feeling of inadequacy, don't really want to do it because they don't really feel like anything that they're going to see or contribute is going to be important enough to the conversation. But we can help people. Help board members to learn what to look for. First of all, what is going on in the classroom that is mission critical? What is going on in the classroom that is mission critical? And I would recommend that you devise a rubric for this. It doesn't have to be very specific. Just maybe 4 or 5 or 6 general points that sort of summarize the identity of your school. The this is who we are question. So that when you come to your responsibility as an assessor of the integrity of the mission, the assessor of the integrity of your identity, you've got a one-to-one comparison between what you've seen and how you've thought about what you've seen to your responsibility to gauge where you are. And if you go into the observation with that mentality, it's going to guide more. It's going to focus your observation and make it that much more valuable, both to the staff and your colleagues on the board. So what are those 4, 5, 6 crucial identity markers for your school, and how do they find their way into the experience of your second graders? It's a great question to ask. I was in a seminar a few weeks ago with David Hicks, who some of you probably know. He's the author of Norms and Nobility, and he served a lot of really great schools over the years. And he suggested that headmasters ask themselves and everyone around them on a regular basis, how are we achieving our mission as a school in Jimmy's life today? How are we achieving our school's mission in Julie's life today? So as a board member, you're going into the classroom, and that's what you want to be asking yourself is, how do we seem to be achieving our mission here in this classroom today? Conversely, what's happening in this classroom that really isn't helping our mission at all? or maybe inadvertently undermining our mission, or at least how I perceive our mission. All right? That's valuable, valuable information for dialogue. If a board member comes out of a classroom and goes, geez, that wasn't what I expected at all, you need to have that conversation, right? Because if a board member is not confident that what they're seeing is actually what ought to be happening, then the overall confidence that the board member brings to their responsibilities is going to be undermined. And their effectiveness as a governor in the school is really going to be affected and diminished. So learn what to look for by thinking about what is mission critical. Second thing for board members, and especially those who don't have a lot of educational experience, professional or otherwise, and especially board members who don't, who themselves are not gifted to teach. Okay, you don't have an innate talent to teach. Not everybody does, and you know, it's just the way God made us. But learn how to appreciate different styles of instruction, different styles of classroom management, different styles. You know, there are just all sorts of things that happen in a classroom that we as teachers apply our personalities to as our way of dealing with things, our way of getting things done, that may or may not look a whole lot like what's happening in the classroom next to ours, and yet the same objectives are still being achieved. Okay? So make sure that you're aware when you go into the classroom that there are lots of different ways to skin this cat. And one of the things that talented teachers bring to the job is creativity, diversity, variety of approach. And if you've got a good curriculum and you have adequate accountability for achieving those curriculum goals, then you don't have to worry too much about how those objectives are being achieved when it comes to the varieties of personality. I do know, too, that in classical Christian schools sometimes, because what we're doing seems so unfamiliar to us. I mean, my guess is that 90% of us in here weren't educated or had no experience in a school that is like the one that we are involved with right now. Okay? So we don't really have this instinctive context that helps us to know intuitively when we're doing well. So our default position often is to go to a school that we think is doing well and then take that back and imitate it. All right? And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that, at least to start. But that school cannot be your school, and the culture of that place and the expectations of the parents and the students and the types of people that have been recruited and hired there and the types of training that they've been through is never going to be duplicated over in your school environment. So you have got to, over time, understand that there are going to be differences in approach between schools. There are going to be differences in approach within faculties. And if you have if your mission is intact and you have solid goals that you are trying to achieve and they are measurable and achievable, all of that variety is really an asset to what you're doing. Okay? And that's important for board members to remember. Education is not a formulaic enterprise. It just isn't. And we all know and admire good teachers who themselves say things like, I never have an easy year because every year I encounter a totally different situation. And you're sitting there going, if you haven't ever done this job, you're sitting there going, how can that be? We still have Saxon. We still have Shirley. You know, the children are still wearing the same clothes. You know, the environment is identical. How can you say that, you know, every year is a totally different situation and you have to retool almost everything you do on an annual basis in order to get the job done? Well, that's a reflection of the complexity of this occupation and the subtlety that talented teachers over time develop the skill to be able to respond to so that they are always productive regardless of the challenges that meet them. There's a lot of conversation probably in every school about learning styles. And I think sometimes classical schools get accused of being insensitive to varieties of learning styles. And it is true. Most of our schools are pretty regimented as compared to more conventional schools. And, you know, we have ways of getting things done and ways that students behave. And one of the great things about Christian classical schools, I've never heard anyone say about any Christian classical school that it was unproductive. All right? We know how to produce. We can get things done. All right? That's one of the great strengths of what we're doing. Now, where was I going with that? How did I start? Oh, learning styles. Yeah, learning styles. So we get, you know, occasionally we'll say, you know, it's so regimented, it's so structured, you know, the only kid that you can teach is this really narrow profile. That's the only kid who can really succeed in your school. How many of you have heard that before from parents? You know, you're just not flexible enough. You don't really understand that, you know, some kids just don't learn this way. And you know, these extend, you know, there are extremes on this. There are those of us who sometimes say, well, if they're going to succeed in our school, they better become our profile, you know, and we can do it. You know? And then on the other end, I had a conversation with a parent. This was a very friendly conversation, but we were talking about something that's a little bit controversial in our school right now, and he suggested that his child ought to be able, that we ought to be able to assess that his child knows the things that he's being taught without us actually giving him an assessment. I said, of any kind? Well, you should just know in talking with him that he gets it. I'm like, I don't know. So, you know, we've got these different extremes. From a board member standpoint, watching a classroom, I think it's useful to remember that the teacher and talented, experienced teachers know this, and they develop the skill of responding to this. Has how many children in your classroom? Let's say 16. Has 16 different learning styles in that classroom. Now, they're not all absolutely distinct from one another, but there are 16 personalities with 16 different homes, 16 different motivations, 16, I mean, just about everything that contributes to a child's ability to learn is unique to that child. That makes this a very, very complicated job. Now, people who have been gifted with this talent rise to that challenge. And they're looking always for ways to overcome the difficulty that presents. People who are not gifted have a difficult time rising to that challenge, and it frustrates them and it burns them out. And we've all seen that before. But as a board member, learn what to look for and go in to the classroom anticipating that you're going to have to see things that you maybe don't understand. And those are points of dialogue, but they don't necessarily mean that the school isn't accomplishing what it ought to be accomplishing with these kids. Third, mind your manners. Mind your manners. Remember that the person who is in that room is a professional. And they deserve some deference. They deserve a lot of deference because the school has placed them in charge of those children in that space for that period of time. And that needs to be respected. I heard a story about an accreditation visit. And it was just one of these, you know, you're standing around talking to colleagues and say, I heard this happen one time at a place. A teacher was teaching in the classroom, and someone was there from an accrediting organization observing the classroom, and something happened. A student misbehaved or did something, and the accrediting team member, the observer, no relationship to the school at all, stopped the class, intervened, corrected the child for the teacher. Now that is an extreme example, but think about it from a teacher's perspective. Here I am, I've got a board member in my classroom. The presence of a board member in my classroom already has just put a huge amount of pressure on me. All right. And something else that board members need to remember is that you cannot ever take off your board member hat. All right? It doesn't exist. When you're a board member, you're a board member. Wherever you go, whatever you do, in every interaction with your teachers, and teachers tend to look at board members in schools as their supervisors. Even at a higher level than their faculty, or than their administration. So just remember that when you go into that classroom, you are creating stress already by your presence, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's not your fault. It's not the teacher's fault. It's just a reality of the relationship. All right. So mind your manners. Let the teacher do his or her job, and be as inconspicuous and make your presence as benign as possible on the environment on the classroom for two reasons. Number one, out of courtesy to the teacher. Number two, the more conspicuous you are, the less you're actually seeing what ordinarily happens in that classroom. So the more inconspicuous you can be, the more you're seeing what really happens on a daily basis in your school. One of the things that Laura Ruby suggests to our board members when they visit classrooms is that when you leave, as you leave, leave an encouraging note. Write something down that says, I saw something really wonderful in here happen today. Thank you for doing a great job. Leave it on the desk. The teacher comes back to the desk. Okay, just remember what's going on in the teacher's head. She's sitting there teaching. She knows you're there. She's trying to pretend like you're not. It doesn't work, but she's doing her best. And at whatever point you decide you've seen enough and you get up to leave, in her mind, you just saw something that has caused you to want to leave. I can't take anymore, you know. And so as you exit, no matter how conspicuous you can be, as you exit the classroom, she immediately starts rehearsing everything that happened while you were sitting there and is asking herself what you would have thought of that and what price she's going to have to pay at some point because of what you saw. That's just the nature of being a responsible person. So she gets back to her desk after the lesson is over, and there's a note there sitting from you. sitting there from you that says, here's something wonderful that I saw. Thank you for doing a great job. All that goes away. All goes away. Now you've just blessed her by your presence in the classroom rather than increase her anxiety about, you know, whether she actually belongs in this profession or not. Okay? I'm telling you, this is the way we think. Fourth, know what to do with the information you gather. And this is something that together as a board, you need to agree on. Say, what are we going to do with the things that we observe? Like I said before, our board has a requirement for itself that people write up a report. It's not very, the guidelines are not very specific, but they submit it to me so that I have the benefit of their perspective and the opportunity to follow up in dialogue if something weird happened in the classroom and we just kind of need to be able to talk about it and know what it means. So know what to do with the information you gather. How are you going to share it with each other? As a board, what role in your responsibilities does that information play? And I can't really recommend to you what role any board, you know, ought to give or to that because, you know, boards and schools, you know, we've all kind of organized ourselves differently, and some boards are more or less involved in personnel decisions and that sort of thing. So I can't really recommend, but figure out how the things you see, the information you gather, is going to be used in whatever responsibilities the board has taken to itself for the various decisions that you have to make in the assessments. So that you don't just have all this information floating around out there, or that somehow just sort of inadvertently the information that you have, even though it's, you know, it's limited in scope, gets overused. That more credence is given to the observation than the observation actually deserves. So you kind of have to balance both ends of that. But it's important to know going in, where is this information going and what purpose will it serve?